Super Talk Mississippi Media Production. You're listening to Thunder and Lightning on Super Talk Mississippi, covering Mississippi State sports like nobody else. With Sports Talk Mississippi's Brian Haydad and Robbie Falk of On3 Sports. Now get ready for Thunder and Lightning.
This is Thunder and Lightning here on Super Talk Mississippi. Brian Haydad and Robbie Falk here with on a Friday morning. Thanks for joining us and starting the weekend with us here at supertalk.fm or wherever it is that you get podcasts from. We appreciate you guys out there, our great listeners, especially our servicemen and women out there taking care of us. I want to thank our sponsors over at Strange Brew Coffee House and Churn and Spoon Ice Cream. Start your day the right way with a trip to the drive-thru over at Strange Brew Coffee House here in Starkville. Or at Brupolo over in Tupelo. It'd be a little weird, Robbie, if Brupolo was in Anchor.
That would be a little weird.
That's near your stomping grounds. It's in Chickasaw County. Not too far away.
Not that far. That's probably about 40 minutes, 45 minutes.
Let me see here for more, because I know where you live. Yeah, that's probably about right. Wherever you are in our great state, you can enjoy Strange Brew Coffee each and every morning. It's just a click away. It's at strangebrewcoffeehouse.com. The Mississippi Beef Council wants to remind you that beef, it's what's for dinner. Apparently, beef's what's for dinner tonight, Robbie Falk.
What are we telling you? It is.
Mississippi pot roast.
We got a pot roast right now cooking.
You better have some left over by the time I get there at 6:30 tonight, because I'm going to come home and eat some of that.
It should be done around 5 p.m.
You know, you just let it sit there for another hour. That's it until I get there.
I don't know if I can wait.
All right.
There should be enough to go around, but I cannot promise it.
I haven't done a pot roast in a while. I got one sitting in the I got a roast sitting in the freezer. I need to do it. Courtesy of our good friend Paul Jones. Yeah, he gave me a roast when he came over for the Christmas party. So
I love a good chuck roast.
I do. Oof. I need to cook that this weekend. Whatever you're doing this weekend, let's put some beef on the grill. Nothing beats the sizzle of beef. Beef, it's what's for dinner. Thank you to our friends at the Mississippi Beef Council. College Corner, collegecornerstore.com. That's the place to find the maroon and white merchandise that you are looking for. Valentine's Day is coming up. Fellas, ladies, you got a bulldog in your life? Get them something cool from College Corner. Two locations to serve you in the Jackson area. They're in Ridgeland by Fleet Feet. They're in Florida by the Half Shell. Or you can shop online at collegecornerstore.com. Restaurant Tyler, Starkville's flagship restaurant for lunch, dinner, or Sunday brunch. Best meal in town is at Restaurant Tyler. I'm very hungry. I haven't had lunch yet. I don't eat breakfast. And I'm just telling you that I could house some Restaurant Tyler right now. I might need two fillets of catfish on that one. Two extra. Yeah. Need three fillets total.
I mean, I wouldn't slap your hand.
No.
I'm not getting in the way of that.
I'll be honest with you. I might go do that as soon as we wrap this up. I'm not too far off that idea. When you want a great meal, that's the other thing about Restaurant Tyler is you get a meat, you get two veg, you get the cornbread, you're full. You know, it's good value for the money. So,
good old country cooking.
Exactly. You walk out of there, you're like, only thing I need now is a nap. So it's tough. I will say this. It will decrease your productivity at work if you go eat at Restaurant Tyler, but it's worth it.
And it's a side effect.
Exactly.
It is a side effect.
It's not a side effect. It's a plus. It's a bonus. It's a feature.
That's true. This isn't a Menjara commercial.
Is that one of those things where you have like a...
will cause explosive diarrhea, fear, hallucinations,
shame. You will emit the odor of five rotten eggs. These people are out there
having the time of their life.
What does it even cure? Oh, nothing. Yeah.
Well, it cures this one thing, but you have these 50 other things. You have to get these other medicines to fix because of this.
I take one Menjara and six Imodium every day.
That takes me into my next point. Let's talk a little bit about the RFK hearings, confirmation. You don't want to talk about conspiracies. Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe next show.
Maybe next time. Yeah. Yeah. Restaurant Tyler. No conspiracy.
What are your thoughts on red dye?
I mean, I love Skittles is what I would say to that. We still haven't done the Skittles blind taste test, by the way. We forgot.
Becky asked me yesterday if we had done that. I told her we were doing that. She's very interested in this.
Here's what we're going to do. I'm coming to your house on Saturday. I will bring a bag of Skittles, and we'll film it and do it there.
Okay, you want to do that?
Before the Royal Rumble, we will do the blind Skittles taste test. The Skittles Rumble.
Let's do it.
All right.
For the rumblings?
No, we'll just I don't know how we're going to do that, but we'll figure it out. We may just have some content. We may just put it out there.
Yeah, we might just put it out on Twitter.
Not everything has to be work. Sometimes we can just do things for fun, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
All right. One last one.
We do this for fun, honestly.
Yeah. Priority One Bank, 16 locations to serve you throughout Central Mississippi. Let PriorityOneBank.com be your guide. They'll show you not only where they're located, but how they're going to help you invest, manage your money, and prepare for the future. Now more than ever, when you have questions about your money, you can't afford to wait around. You need a level of service you're only going to get at a bank like Priority One Bank. If you live in Central Mississippi, you live near a Priority One Bank. Let Priority One Bank make you their priority. We have a great show. Sometimes I'm like, you know, sometimes I'll just be honest with you. Me and Robbie, we're just trying to get through it. You know, we got to do it. This is a great show today. I've got two interviews in the can that are outstanding. I talked to the new guy on the college baseball beat, Jacob Rudner. He took over at Baseball America for our friend Teddy Cahill. I thought he was an outstanding interview. I went in depth with some of the SEC. We talked to Mississippi State, but we talked some SEC baseball. For Mississippi State baseball, I got Justin Parker on the phone today. Great interview with the Mississippi State pitching coach. 20 minutes of his time. Really went in depth on some of his guys and some of his philosophies. I think you're going to like that interview. But before we get to baseball, and of course, our Royal Rumble preview. Go ahead. So I need like a siren back there for when.
Are you doing it at the front of the show? Coming.
Huh?
Are you doing it at the front of the show?
No. We're doing it last. Okay. It's last. Dead last.
I was about to say, you're really. That's some sicko behavior.
I'm cruising
friend.
For a bruising if I do that.
Yeah, that is some sicko behavior.
I want to start with basketball. Mississippi State hosting the Missouri Tigers this weekend. Haven't heard from you since they lost that game to Alabama. Very tough loss for Mississippi State. As always, somebody comes out of nowhere to hit 7 3-pointers against the Bulldogs. His name is Chris Youngblood in this one. Watching that game, Robbie, I feel like Mississippi State fans, if it was only happening like once a year, it would be like, oh, well, you know, that's a top 10 team, and they took them down to the wire. That's obviously we're okay. But when it happens every time, whether it's Kentucky, whether it's Alabama, eventually you got to get the payoff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know when that's going to come for Mississippi State. I certainly don't think it's going to come in a few weeks when they go to Tuscaloosa. State had a lot of chances in that game and just couldn't get the job done.
Yeah, I mentioned it in my column this morning. It's one of those games that Chris Jans said when he took this job, he didn't want Mississippi State fans to experience. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you remember that quote he gave, he didn't want fans coming out of the stadium kicking the can, frustrated over, you know, losing at home. And that's been a constant in these ball games against Alabama and Kentucky. Now, he broke through last year, beat Auburn. He beat Tennessee. So, you know, he's shown that he can win against elite ball clubs. Mm-hmm. They can compete and they can win against those teams. For whatever reason, Alabama and Kentucky is just Mississippi State's Achilles heel right now. And it's not that they're just getting blown out in games. And they have been blown out against Alabama. But more often than not, when Bama comes to Starkville, it's a very competitive game that Mississippi State is in late in the ball game, and they can't find a way to win. But let's be honest here, too. It's been a problem for Mississippi State at the end of regulation, even in wins. If you look at the Ole Miss game and you look at the South Carolina game, State was bad in the final couple of minutes of regulation. Turnovers, open threes, good looks, whatever. That for whatever reason, they just have these mishaps, if you will, or these hiccups. I don't know what you would call it. It's what happens to this team in the final minute and a half that is really damaging for them right now. And so it's finding a way to win those. You know, I told you when it happened, when Keyshawn Murphy missed the layup, I realized that it was a great look and that he, you know, should have made that shot. But I really felt like they needed a timeout right there and try to get the last shot. And they didn't get a timeout on either of those final two possessions. And Chris Jans, he made a good point after it, he didn't want Alabama's defense to get set. He felt like his best chance to score was to do it with the defense a little disjointed. And I can get on board with that. Again, Keyshawn Murphy, you know, 9 times out of 10 makes that play right there. And I want people to understand that in no way should Keyshawn Murphy be, you know, blamed for this loss. 18 points, 6 rebounds, was excellent off the bench. I don't think that he deserves any blame, even though he missed that layup there with a chance to go up on top there. I think, you know, you and I both believe Alabama brings the ball down right there and hits a three. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just how the game was going. That was going to be their 16th three-pointer. It would have ripped Mississippi State's heart out anyway. So there still was 10 seconds remaining. Alabama could have very easily won the ball game there. So I just can't blame Keyshawn. I think there's just so many other issues for the team that went into the loss beyond just those final two possessions. 15 of 31 from three from Alabama. 17, 18 offensive rebounds, whatever it was. You cannot give them the second chances that you gave them.
Yeah.
And you can't allow them to have some of the looks that they had from three, but that's been a constant problem for this team. The rebounding has been pretty good for this team, with the exception of these last two ball games. The three-point shooting defense has been abysmal for Mississippi State all year long, and it just isn't getting fixed.
And that's going to be an issue this weekend for Mississippi State as they take on the Missouri Tigers, one of the better three-point shooting teams in the SEC. They average 37% from behind the line. That is a recipe for disaster. There is no quick fix for this one. Mississippi State's just got to find a way to kind of play around it, I guess, more than anything else. Like I said, I don't know the answer to that. One thing I do know is that we saw Josh Hubbard for the first time in a few weeks against the Alabama Crimson Tide. 38 points. I talked to you about this at the game. The similarities of his game and Ja'Kayla Jordan's game from Monday. Massive career games, and yet their teams can't find a way to win. Everybody wants to say Hubbard's back. I do want to see back-to-back games. I'm not saying he has to score 38, Robbie, but I do want to see him score 20, 22, 23 points and have a quality shooting game before I'm willing to say he's back. But, man, last night was even in defeat, watching Hubbard play like that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and it kind of goes into what we've been saying about him is he hasn't been playing poorly. The shots haven't really been falling. He's getting assists. He's defending. Mm-hmm. He's not turning the ball over. You don't see any, dejected behavior from him or head hanging or anything like that. So that's a good sign to me. That's a sign of a player that is still locked in mentally, and the shots just aren't going in. And, you know, some of the shots he's missed during that stretch were like in and out, you know, rimming out, whatever. They weren't bad misses. He just was not really able to knock him down. And last night, I'll tell you what I thought was really the difference for him, and it's been kind of what we've been talking about we want to see from him. A little more dribble drive from him, getting to the rim, drawing fouls on the run, those floaters that he's really good at that we saw a lot of last year, mid-range pull-up jumpers. He was incorporating more of that in the game, and it wasn't just – launching threes all game long. I think he shot 28 shots.
Correct. And 15 threes.
15 threes.
Yeah.
So 13 inside that's a recipe for success.
Yeah, he's 8-13 inside the line. So, I mean.
That is where Josh Hubbard needs to live, because what it does is it keeps the defense on their toes, and you see more of those ankle-breaking step backs, crossovers, because the defense is having to account for the fact that he could get mid-range. He can get to the rim. He can take him off the dribble. It's so much better for Mississippi State when Josh Hubbard's able to be multiple like that with his shot selection. And we saw it time and time again, him getting great looks from three, and he just knocked them down. And really, that's who Josh Hubbard is in these games where he's got to go step for step, these games against Kentucky and Alabama, even Auburn sometimes, Tennessee. He's had big games against these teams at times because he really kind of rises to the occasion. He feeds off of that.
Yeah.
And I think State, for the most part, against these teams that play with pace, I think that they can have success offensively because they're a little more free-flowing. In these games where they are really bogged down and they're slowing the game down and they're playing deep in the shot clock, that's the games where they struggle offensively. When they're able to kind of get out and run and their offense has a lot of motion in it and they're coming off those picks and knocking down shots and they're really, for the most part, the game is really stretched out because they're getting a lot of possessions. That's the success that you find at Kentucky and Alabama. Mm-hmm. They have so many possessions. I think that's where State needs to live offensively. They need to have as many possessions as they can get, and see what you can get there. I don't think shortening the game works for this Mississippi State team. I think you got to let them play freely, and that's what they did on Wednesday night. They scored in the 80s, and they were in position because of Josh Hubbard, pretty much. But they also have these games, and like players disappear offensively. They're having way too many highs and lows
mm-hmm.
from these teams on the offensive side of the ball, or from these players. Riley Kugel had 2 points.
Mm-hmm. Cam Matthews, three shots.
Cam Matthews shot two times, and had 4 points. Like you gotta have, they gotta get more from more people, and that's kind of what we were expecting coming into this season. Is there's going to be 3-4 guys night in and night out that are scoring, and they're just right now they're getting like two.
Mm-hmm.
They've got to have more instead of all these extreme ups and downs. They got to have more from their team, and certainly not having RJ Melendez didn't help.
Yeah, you think about like State's success this year. They've had 4 and 5 guys in double figures. Last night looked like a last year box score where it was just Hubbard and Tolu, and everybody else was just kind of getting what little they could get. Yeah, State definitely needs Kugel to be in double figures. They need at least 3 guys a game in double figures. 4, and it becomes tough to beat them at that point. If one other guy's in double figures, you win the game. Mm-hmm. Simple as that. So, Nwoko played well, had 7 points and 6 rebounds in I think 18 minutes. State's bigs combined for 25 and 12. You'll take that from your big guys. So they just got to find a few more things. Do you think they get the win on Saturday? Did they bounce back? Or I worry, you saw it last week with Ole Miss, that they let Texas A&M beat them twice against the same Missouri team. Can State shake this off and get out? I think being at home helps them a lot.
Yeah, I do. I do think they bounce back just because that's what this team has done under Chris Jans. When they desperately need a win, they seem to get it. This team, I really believe that they are mentally tough mm-hmm. and they fight, and that's kind of the key with them. And they play extremely well at home. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. They've lost 2 ball games, but they've lost them to 2 really good teams, and they've been close ball games. So it's not a situation where they're just beating up on bad teams or whatever. The hump has been very kind to Mississippi State, and they were in position to win both of those games they've lost. They just came up short, and Kentucky went to Tennessee this week and won that ball game at Tennessee. So that's a team that has been really good on the road too. So we'll see what happens, but I really do think that they're going to bounce back here and win this ball game. But they have got to limit Missouri from long range. That they cannot get in this 80 to 90 range again. They really need to make it their kind of game.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm clamoring to get from Mississippi State in these top 25 games. Just can you just play your game?
They play everybody else's game. You're absolutely right.
They do it every game. I mean, it's that they played. They played into Ole Miss's game. They played into South Carolina's game, and they've done it against Kentucky and Alabama.
They played into Memphis's game. Memphis just couldn't hit shots.
They couldn't hit shots.
As simple as that. So, I mean, and State had something to do with that, I would think. But you're not wrong that for a good basketball team, State does not impose its will very often. So we'll see what happens on Saturday, Humphrey Coliseum noon tip.
It's just so crazy seeing like nobody gets a break in this league.
Nah.
Like if you look at all these schedules, like it's just it's utterly insane. Because, you know, Missouri's about to have State, Tennessee, and A&M in three straight games. I mean, it's just – it's absolutely brutal. But Missouri, one and three on the road this year for Missouri. They lost to Memphis.
Yeah.
On the road.
Mm-hmm.
Who did they beat?
Missouri on the road. It was Florida, wasn't it?
They lost at Auburn. They did beat Florida in Gainesville.
Yeah.
83-82.
I mean, that's what we're talking about here. You know, Ole Miss kind of had their break last night, right? They get an unranked Texas team. They only won by three, and now they go back to back. They play Auburn and Kentucky. I mean, Jans talked about it after they lost to Kentucky. There's no mourning period, right? You just got to shake it off and get up off the mat. So,
that's the test for this team.
Yeah,
because you got to win this game because you're about to go on the road to Georgia, who's been really good at home.
Yeah.
You can't afford to lose here and then really get bogged down and have to go play Georgia and some of the schedule you got coming up. So they really need to win this one to keep pace.
Yeah, I agree. All right, let's move into the rest of the show. That's brought to you by our friends over at Two Brothers Smoked Meats in the heart of the Cotton District, or the older brother in the Cotton District. I don't need to be doing these ad reads when I'm so hungry. This is driving me insane.
Normally, that's how they get you.
I make a point to eat before I do this show, usually, and I haven't had a chance to do that today.
It's like when you go to Disney World and they're like piping in the smells.
Yeah.
Like they pipe in the smells from like the cotton candy.
Yeah.
I
can smell the pork rind nachos.
Yes.
I can smell them.
That's how they get you. See, Two Brothers, they knew you were going to do this. They get the ad read in. It makes you hungry, and it makes the people at home hungry.
I need it. They need to make a little cologne, a little pork rind nacho.
Works 60% of the time.
No. 60% of the time, it works every time.
There you go.
Yeah. It's pork rind nacho by Odeon. Yeah, I like that. Well, until they do that, I'll just have to settle for the real thing. I'll go grab some pork rind nachos probably a little later this afternoon. I may make two stops for lunch.
You got a restaurant, Tyler, and Two Brothers.
Lay off me. I'm starving.
Save some for the rest of us, Jennifer.
Yeah, exactly. Two Brothers Smoked Meats and the older brother. I got to get over there. I'm dying here. I'm to the point now where it's affecting my brain. Great products, great service. Every business likes to promise it to you. They deliver it to you at Advantage Business Systems. That's what they've been doing for 50 years.
50, brother.
50. When you need technology for your business, give Advantage Business Systems a call. And then if you need service, that's just a phone call away too. So give them a call today. If you need a new copier, a new printer, new computers, that's the number to call, 601-362-9192. Or you can visit them online, absms.com. I have Advantage Business Systems will help your business do business. Before you go to the games this weekend, it's a whiteout this weekend. If you're like, I don't have a white polo, don't have a white pullover, head over to Maroon & Co. They will hook you up with a great-looking shirt with the logo that you want. And best of all, you can save a little money on it. 15% off with our promo code, THUNDER15. You can use it in the store. You can use it online. Again, Valentine's Day is coming up. If you want to get a great gift for somebody in your life that's a Mississippi State fan, get it at Maroon & Co. Before you go to the game this Saturday, before you go to the hump, make a stop at Maroon & Co. All right, let's lead off with Coach Parker. Talked to Coach Justin Parker earlier today. About his staff, about some of the newer faces you're going to be seeing, and some of the veterans that he's got on that group, plus just a good in-depth conversation about pitching and his thoughts on where the game is right now. I thought it was a really good interview. I hope you agree. We'll go now to my talk with Coach Justin Parker. We are getting closer and closer to opening day, and I know nobody is more excited than Mississippi State baseball fans. Baseball, a way of life here in Starkville. Justin Parker, big piece of the Diamond Dog puzzle of trying to get back to Omaha. And, Coach, I got to ask a question. You know, if our elected officials could engineer a turnaround as big as you did in 1 year, we would be a lot better off as a country. You know, how did you take a team that was, quite frankly, not even SEC level at a pitching perspective? They were the worst pitching staff in the conference, and you turned them into one of the better ones in the span of 12 months. What goes into a turnaround like that?
I just went to work every day. I've got experience doing it to some degree, just with my tenures at other places have been a little bit shorter and had to work in a hurry, and I've had some success in year one. I felt like the bones and the guts of the talent was there. So just about going to work, instilling confidence, challenging guys, coaching them hard, establishing a standard, holding them to the standard, being here early, being here late. It's just, it's just about work. That's really what it was about for me.
What's the unforgivable sin to Justin Parker? What's the thing that a player, if they do this, you can't trust them?
It's command, probably. It's strikes. It's command. Those type of things are a little harder. I felt like I had a lot of success last year with some guys with some of those turnarounds, reworking the delivery, the movement patterns, things like that, the arsenal development with several guys. I think that's the easier part. But the command of the strike zone and the ability to throw it in it, those are things that I got asked this question a couple of years ago on a Zoom call and a pitching conference, and they said, "Well, your staffs," and I should knock on wood saying this, but I got to ask your staffs. They always seem to throw strikes. Like, what magic drills do you have for command? And I said, "Well, the magic drill is the guys that don't do it, they don't pitch." So, that piece for me is an expectation at a super high level. And then just being a great game manager, fielding the short game and taking care of the run game, those things are incredibly important for me.
When you think about it, 12 months ago, if I had asked you, what do you think your rotation is going to look like? You probably would have been like, I feel pretty good about these guys and things like that. I don't think you could have thought you had two top 50 picks sitting there in your staff. Maybe you did, and kudos to you if you did. When you look at this group and the group you're about to put out there, do you feel like they have the same kind of potential that you ended up having with the group last year?
No, you're spot on. I mean, you try to always create some relativity based on the past and where we were and what our thoughts were preparing for last year, on this day. And we didn't, truly, we didn't. We were managing through that. We had options. I felt like we had good options. I feel like this year, I'm not saying that we will pitch better, but this year it's just easier when you're in year two and you're developing leadership with the guys. And I have a great group of leaders. I have guys internally that have been here, obviously now with me for 2 years, that are incredible influences on the rest of the staff. I have a lot of new guys with great experience at the beginning of games or at the end of games from other really, really good programs, and that helps from an exposure to different things in our group. And so I think the strength is our depth. With that being said, as far as, just the expectation of what could the ceiling potentially look like and what are the starter candidates and those type of things, I think time will tell. It kind of will play itself out. But, I say that often. Like this time last year, I loved Cal Steven. I loved Gerangelo. I love Nate. I love my group. I didn't know it was going to be what it was in the sense that two top 50 picks, three top three round picks, seven or eight total pitchers drafted. Like that stuff comes from, just going to work every day, putting guys in the right spots. And truthfully, looking back, I think, and it's a challenge. This is, I think, going to be the challenge again for me this year is with the depth of the staff being potentially the strength. How do we get guys in the right roles early? How do we get guys handling the right, the right situations as early as possible to be able to allow the entire group to flourish? I think we probably found that down the stretch last year. I wish we would have found it, about a month sooner with some of the flex roles with with Brooks Auger, with Tyler Davis being pretty rock solid at the end of games. I don't think we started the year thinking we had Tyson Harden and Tyler Davis as rock solid as they were at the end of games. So those things, just having a little bit more experience, a little bit more time with my group, knowing them a little bit more, and then trying to get them in the right spots, and trying to draw, some of the clues from history of what happened last year with them and what they've done in the past to try to give you a better insight.
I'm going to let you be pitching coach nerd here for a couple of questions. I know you like to talk about the science and all of that. You know, coaching in sports, it's adjustment, right? It's you start doing this, your opponent does this, and it's kind of that constant chess game. We're starting to see hitters really get the adjustments to velocity now. They're finding their way to hitting these 100-mile-an-hour, 97, 98-mile-an-hour pitchers. Do you foresee that being bringing another change where you're going to go back to seeing guys who can throw with more movement, throw more off-speed stuff? Is that going to be the next move in the chess game?
Oh, I think 100%. I mean, I think you're already starting to see that. To me, I think when you're talking about fastball, and fastball quality is something I talk about a lot, because like raw velocity is probably the fifth or sixth most important thing when you really start looking at how does a fastball perform in a game. You're seeing it at the big league level. You're seeing like a crazy distribution of leaning more towards the secondary pitches and the off speed pitches, and guys are commanding secondary stuff at a really high level. I got a lot of guys this year, different than I felt like last year. Our breaking ball quality was just okay. I feel like it's better this year. And there's a lot of guys I have on this staff that have both slider and curveball or two breaking pitches. And so relating that back to fastball, I think, you know, our league to me is if you can keep the ball in the ballpark and you can eliminate free bases, I think you have a chance to win almost every game. So with the movement, with sinker ballers, it's just harder to score runs and bunches off of them. So those are things that we pay attention to daily, you know, just what the quality of the fastball is, maybe what the separator is on each individual guy and each individual pitch, and then just try to push those guys, whatever the uniqueness is for them, you know, whether it's a left-hander with good ride or a right-hander with good sink in a low slot, we're just trying to create as much of an uncomfortable at-bat and a mismatch as we can.
When you think about recruiting nowadays, you know, they have these huge showcases where there are these young kids out there. They're raw, for lack of a better word. What are the traits you look for in a young kid as a pitcher that you want to see? Because you know you're not seeing the finished product at that point.
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, probably physically, you're looking for size, athleticism, and length. You're looking for toughness and competitiveness. Those are probably the toughest. Like, I can't make a kid that's 5'9" turn into 6'3". And honestly, you know, the competitive piece, having great poise and great feel for the game and being an elite competitor and handling adversity, those things are a little bit harder to develop as well. Arsenals, velocity, delivery, and movement pattern a little bit easier, you know. So for me, those are kind of the traits I'm looking for. And you know, the trend that we see, and that this is what makes it incredibly challenging, is every kid that you talk to in the recruiting process, what are your goals? And they say, well, coach, I want to pitch in the SEC. I want to play professional baseball, and I want to do it as a freshman. And you know, you kind of chuckle on the other end, because they don't all know what they're asking for. Most of them have never dealt with adversity, and they certainly haven't dealt with it in front of 10 to 15,000 fans. They haven't faced 21 and 22 year old hitters day in and day out. And most of them on the showcase circuit, they go out and they pitch in these tournaments, and it's all like an all-star event where they each throw 3 to 6 outs, go home, hang out, show up the next week and do it. They never have to pitch through an order a second or a third time in most cases. And so like you end up getting a guy, you know, a young kid, as your question in the recruiting process, you get freshmen in here. And the thing that I tell families all the time is, because everybody, well, coach, what's one piece of advice? Well, I would say get very good at getting off the mat, responding from adversity. You're going to get knocked down. Be really good at learning fast and applying information. And you're going to have to take that more often from dealing with failure and adversity than you will success early in your career at this level in most cases. So those are the things that, you know, I enjoy that part of my job. I enjoy that part of teaching and just developing the competitor, developing the elite thinker, developing a guy that can be an in-game adjustment maker and a problem solver and have, you know, the tools to go into the game. And whether you have great stuff or bad stuff, or whether you have all your pitches working or nothing working, still understanding that I can still do this right now. Like, I can still get three outs before giving up a run, regardless of what my stuff is. It's been done before. So that part I enjoy doing, but you are looking for traits with kids that are intelligent and that are coachable, and they want that type of environment.
So we're 2 weeks away from opening day. And, you know, you still got plenty of time to make some decisions. But if it was tomorrow, I'm not going to ask you to name names, but do you feel like you have a good handle on who the top, your first three guys would be in the rotation?
I feel like I have a good cluster of guys that we can choose from and decide on. There's still a lot. I know, like you said, it's 2 weeks, but there really is quite a bit of a body of work still to be out there from a volume standpoint, workloads, getting guys in the right spots, taking a look at matchups. Our schedule's pretty challenging right off the bat with having, you know, 2 midweeks against, you know, perennial top 25 teams, and then Missouri State coming in, being a really impressive offense in 24. So already taking a look at that stuff. It'll be a little bit more about matchups there, but I have a cluster of guys that you're, you know, kind of building volume and are going to be in that starter candidate type pool. I have a lot of guys in the flex column that can do either, and then, you know, we're bringing on a couple guys slow that have maybe come off some injury that will be a big factor as we go, just depending on how soon we can get there. So I do. I like the options. I like the depth. I felt like there were times last year where, you know, like Luke Dotson was a guy last year that we relied on heavily early in major jams for a freshman. We feel like he's got, you know, a really good fastball and a really good mentality. And he went down and we lost something. Tyson Harden missed a stretch of time and we lost some. Of course, losing Nate Doan, you're scrambling a little bit. And so, you know, when those things hit this year, I feel like we're maybe a little bit more capable of handling it, and we'll just make sure everybody's ready for whatever role it ends up being. And those roles, as you know, I mean, they're never set in stone. You rarely start. I've had it a couple times and been very fortunate, but you rarely start and finish the year with the same three-man rotation and guys in the same roles. And because it's still like, regardless of what you think, you know, the fall is a crazy development-centric program or emphasis for us. And you think of the spring being a little bit more competitive in nature, it's still such a development-oriented period day in and day out that guys grow, you know, from February to maybe April and May. They end up being in a completely different spot mentally and physically. So that's where I'm at with it. I'm not as stressed about elevating pitch counts and getting starters to, you know, some crazy 85 to 95 pitches opening day, because I feel like I want to get a lot of guys out there. I want to get a lot of guys' feet wet. I think we have enough depth to be able to do that and not push. You know, of course, this time of the year is the time of the year that you're concerned with injuries the most. I mean, over three quarters of the Tommy Johns happen in the on-ramp, you know, whether it's December, January, February, and the cold weather doesn't help much. But that's where we're at right now with the group, and we'll just continue to work and evaluate.
Pecoy Conn is a player who's been at Mississippi State for a long time, but you know, he's had some injury issues, and that's kept him from maybe pitching as much as a player who's been here this many years should have pitched. How big a role can he be? Can he be that Friday night guy for you? Can he be a stopgap guy in the bullpen? Can he be a closer? Where does Pico fit in for you this year? And what kind of leader is he in that locker room?
Well, I think he's a leader through his work ethic. I mean, he's a guy that I've been incredibly impressed with, you know, going back to last year, to come off of Tommy John kind of in the middle of the year, simultaneously while working through a lot of delivery flaws and cleaning up a lot of his delivery. I think you saw some really, really good and special stuff last year, and I thought you saw probably a little bit more of kind of the old, you know, unrefined version of him. The where he's at right now, it's almost like night and day different. So I think he's got all the ingredients to be a frontline starter. He's big, he's tough, he's mean, he has experience, he's left-handed. I think his arsenal has grown, his delivery has grown tremendously as it pertains to just being able to create effortless velocity, command both sides of the plate. So he's a guy that we're gonna rely on and hope to be able to be one of those frontline guys.
Another guy that Mississippi State fans are very excited to see because they haven't seen him yet is Mekhi Grant. I think that he was on pace maybe last fall to play a role for you in the 2024 season. Then he has the Tommy John. We talk about that 18-month window for coming back. He's at the back end of that now. What's his role on this team? And is he a guy who could be maybe your stopper? Maybe Chris Lemonis, when I talked to him, said could possibly be even be involved in the rotation some.
Yeah, I think the sky's the limit for him. I've been incredibly impressed with his work. And looking at that 18-month time period that he's been here, I don't know that there's been anybody that's grown as much as him. And so we're excited. He's only thrown one inning live. He threw a couple live at-bat sessions in the fall. So we're still getting him acclimated and going to, you know, bring him along slowly. But it's pretty special stuff. It's a guy last fall that was, you know, in the mid upper 90s with a really power slider. He's developed, you know, over the course of his rehab, he's developed a really, really good changeup. It might even right now be his best pitch. He's throwing strikes at a really, really high level. The delivery is cleaned up a ton. He's still got some areas, like a lot of young players, just handling the short game and the run game and situational stuff. But he's a special guy that we think can in time do anything. He can throw the first 18 outs. He could throw the last three outs. He's that special of a talent. Just about executing and going out and getting the experience and getting his feet wet and feeling comfortable.
A player that my my podcast co-host Robbie Falk is intrigued with is Dane Burns. Physically a beast, just looks like a linebacker more than a pitcher. What's his role for you this year?
It's another special left-hander. Dane's a guy that took a gap year, so he's a little bit older than your typical freshman. And I've been really, really impressed with Dane's aptitude. Another guy with crazy arm talent, probably struggled early on a little bit with the other areas, the secondary stuff, the command, the short game, the run game. And just in a short period of time since he's been here, he's my most improved guy here this year. It's a guy that went out in this past summer and was 93, 95 up to 97 throwing, you know, you had talked about fastball quality and velo earlier. So he was throwing all four seamers this summer in a wood bat league. The stuff is incredible, but you know, he just wasn't able to kind of use it and harness it and got hit a little bit. We're throwing all sinkers now. It's a really, really good two pitch mix, and he's developing a third pitch as well. So we think the sky's the limit for him too. He's ahead of some of the other lefties that I've had, you know, just as freshmen thinking about like the superstar lefties to show up in the SEC. I think he's a little bit ahead of where those guys have been early. And just super excited about the flexibility of his role too. He's big enough, like you said, and he's strong enough, and he's tough enough, I think, to eventually grow into a starter. Right now, it's crazy talented in short bursts, and you know, he's a big piece of this thing.
We'll wrap it up with this. You talked earlier about, you know, being able to get up off the mat. You know, you've got a team full of high quality athletes. They can all throw the ball hard. They can locate. They can throw strikes. Mentally, do you like the makeup of your staff?
I love it. And it's, like I said, it's probably the piece of my job that I enjoy the most. It's to me, it's the separator. You know, I always say this, like, no one measures your toughness or your competitiveness when things are going great. They don't. Nobody cares. Just if you're striking out 10 guys, no one's going to say, hey, that's the toughest dude on the field. No, he's really good right now. But can you go out there with less than your best stuff and still have the ability to battle and find a way to win? And I think the win in general, you know, as we're talking about all these analytics, and I'm in the lab right now, I got to be extra careful in here because I still think of this place as half lab, half workshop. But like the win statistic for pitchers is becoming less and less coveted. And for me, it's at a premium still more than ever. I want winners. I want guys that are warriors that can find a way to do it regardless of what they have. And so, you know, we have a mentality of, you know, we're going to train in the jungle, not the zoo. And that piece is something that it's an absolute in our conference. You know, you know it, you've seen it. And so it's something I take a lot of pride in. And I know this program historically has been built on that. On warriors, on competitors, on guys that are tough, gritty, and find a way. And so that's something that our staff will embody and will strive to go out and execute every day, regardless of the outcome, regardless of, you know, fastball velocity and all that. I don't care about any of that when it comes time to go to battle. I care about getting the job done.
2 weeks to opening day, Valentine's Day. You can take the wife out on Thursday.
We have tried to historically. I don't know if we'll get a chance to do it this year or not. You know, time will tell. But actually, a good buddy of mine, Scott Wingo, is coming to town. He's coaching with Manhattan, so we may take him out to dinner and catch up with him. So no, but just excited for the next 2 weeks. Excited to get going. Still got a lot of work to do, but love where we're at. Love the group. Love coming to work every day. It's you know, it is a tough group, and we're very excited to watch those guys compete.
We're very excited to see him. Coach Justin Parker, Mississippi State pitching coach. Thanks so much. Appreciate your time today.
Thank you, Brian. I appreciate you.
He likes your guy, Dane. I said, you know, that's the guy that you're intrigued with. And he said, you've got every reason to be. He can be a piece for Mississippi State this year.
I'm really interested in that guy. Like I said, he's a guy that very mysterious. You don't we're not really talking about him that much, but the stuff is electric from him, and did some good things this summer too. I do think that he can help. I'm very intrigued with him and seeing where he kind of fits in the whole scheme of things.
I am too. A big, powerful left-hander. Sign me up. You see what happens there. So really good coach. Good conversation there with Coach Parker. Appreciate his time. Also talked earlier today to Jacob Rudner. He now covers college baseball for Baseball America. That's been Teddy Cahill's beat for so long. Jacob's the new guy there. Wanted to go a little more into talking about the SEC as well. Got his thoughts on state, but some SEC baseball in this conversation. Let's go down to my talk with Baseball America's Jacob Rudner. Very pleased to welcome the new man on the college baseball beat, Jacob Rudner, covers college baseball for Baseball America. Stepping into some big shoes there. We loved Teddy Cahill, so hopefully we'll have you around for a long time. I don't like change, Jacob. I don't do well with it. So we'll see how it goes. Thanks for joining us here for your first time here on the podcast. Mississippi State baseball, 18th in the Baseball America poll. I feel like you can make a really strong case to rank them higher. I feel like you can make a really strong case not to rank them at all. And so you sort of end up there in the middle at 18. What's the ceiling for this team as you see it, and what's the floor?
Well, listen, I think that you put it perfectly. I see Mississippi State as a team that you could kind of argue in both directions. They have a lot of talent on this roster, but there's a lot to make up for in terms of what they lost, and that's especially the case on the pitching side, where 73% of the group from last year in terms of innings contribution is no longer a part of the program, and they've moved on. So I see Mississippi State as a group that has all the pieces together to be able to make a run and push back to Omaha the way its fans expect it to, and the way Coach Lemonis expects them to. But I also see a lot of room for needing to prove themselves. They do need some guys to step up that either haven't before or haven't at Mississippi State before. Remember, we're in an era now where a lot of contributions are going to have to come from guys who are incoming transfer talent. That is especially the case at a place like Mississippi State this year. And I think that we will probably see that. Like I said, it's a talented group, but there are certainly questions.
When you think about the SEC as a whole, I feel like Mississippi State is kind of right in the middle of those teams. I don't think they're on the same level as a Tennessee right now or a Texas A&M is right this second, but they're certainly good enough to go out and beat those teams in a series. When you think about this SEC, where does Mississippi State kind of fit in for you?
Yeah, listen, so you look over the Baseball America rankings, we have 10 SEC teams in the top 25 right now. So the conference is loaded. And I think Mississippi State, it falls in the middle of that mix somewhere. The top four schools all come from the SEC. That's Texas A&M, Tennessee, LSU, and Arkansas. Florida is right outside the top five. Mississippi State, to me, has the potential, the caliber of talent to climb into that top group. Right now, though, you look through the rankings and we do have them, in that 8, 9, 10 in the conference range. And so that's not a knock, in my opinion. It just speaks to the talent of the conference. I view all of those teams, obviously, as tournament caliber. But certainly, to me, it's a middle of the pack squad right now.
What's really fascinating about State this year is when you look at the SEC teams that are ranked ahead of them, they don't play A&M, they don't play Tennessee, they don't play Arkansas, they don't play Georgia, they don't play Vanderbilt. They do have to play Florida and LSU. But from a scheduling standpoint, Jacob, this feels like as good as you could possibly ask for from being in the SEC. This is a schedule that, when you look at the non-conference, there's not a huge non-conference series or game in there. This is a schedule that's designed to win big for Mississippi State, isn't it?
Well, listen, I think that not only is it a schedule that's designed to win big, but it's quite favorable for a team that, like we just talked about, does have some questions on the pitching side. They do need to see guys step up. There's been a lot of change relative to what they had last year on the staff. And so this is the kind of schedule I think that allows certain guys to acclimate into new roles and kind of grow and see the team be successful. So, yeah, I certainly agree with that.
Let's hit on a couple of the teams that State is going to play in conference, and we'll start with LSU. National champions two seasons ago, took a little bit of a drop off, but I think you're going to do that when you're and you lose the number one and number two overall picks in the draft, it's difficult for anybody to reload from that. Looks like they're back up there amongst the nation's elite. What do you like about that Tiger team?
Listen, I think that if you want to look at the standard in terms of how to operate in the transfer portal, Jay Johnson is the perfect example. This is a guy who has absolutely dominated transfer talent. You just mentioned Paul Skeens, who has already gone on to have great success in the major leagues. That's a transfer talent. This year, we rated them as having the number one transfer class. A significant chunk of that rotation and starting lineup came from other schools. That's Daniel Dickinson, Anthony Ianson, Jacob Myers, another guy who I'm pretty bullish on going into the season. And there are more. I view that as a team that is extremely talented, but I will say, things do need to go right. Last year was not the most impressive season for the Tigers overall. They did not live up to their standards. Jay Johnson would tell you that, but I think they do have the talent in place, mostly via the portal, to be able to bounce back quickly.
Then you have the Florida Gators, who've been one of the most consistent programs in the country over basically the last decade. They had a little bit of a downturn there right after they won their national title, but now back to getting to Omaha basically every year. They come to Starkville for a huge series in the middle of April. What about this Gators team? What do you think about what Kevin O'Sullivan has going in Gainesville this year?
Yeah, that's an interesting squad to me. Last year was not a terribly impressive year until they got to the postseason. They became normal Florida once the tournament started. But prior to that, not such a great season. That was especially the case on the pitching side, where they ranked at the bottom of the conference in staff ERA. That was a very inexperienced staff. A lot of underclassmen contributors. I think the thing that Florida did best this offseason was bring a lot of those guys back. They had a lot of good stuff. I think that the pitchability of that staff was solid. And now they have guys who have seen it and experienced it at a very high level who can come back in and kind of continue to grow into their roles. And then they also did a very good job in the transfer portal. Bobby Bozer from South Florida came in. Kyle Jones, the center fielder from Stetson. And there are others. So the mixture of returning talent and experience on the mound, plus an infusion of transfer talent at the plate, I think is a benefit to Florida's roster.
One more SEC team ranked ahead of Mississippi State, and I didn't hit on them because, I guess I had that brain fart of, oh, yeah, they're in the SEC now, or the Texas Longhorns. That's actually State's opening SEC series. Texas will come to Duty Noble Field. What about the Longhorns? The last time State saw them, obviously, was in Omaha a few years back.
Well, the last time State saw them, they didn't have Jim Schlossnagel at the helm either. So,
no, they did not.
That was the biggest move of the offseason when Texas went out and stole Schlossnagel from rival Texas A&M. Obviously, he brings winning pedigree into the building. But that's also a very solid roster. They brought back some solid talent. Max Bellew, Jalen Flores, the shortstop, both are back in the fold. Jim Schlossnagel told me directly, those were guys who were priorities. He said that for that team to win in his first season in Austin, he needed them back, and that happened. They also did a pretty good job in the transfer portal. Jared Spencer from Indiana State is an encouraging lefty. I think that he's going to be able to kind of front that rotation and do a good job for them. I'm encouraged by what they have in terms of players. I'm more encouraged by what they have at the head coaching position.
And what does it say about the talent level at Texas A&M that they can lose a coach the caliber of Jim Schlossnagel, and yet they seem to be a pretty much undisputed number one? Is this by far the best team in college baseball this year?
I think so. I mean, you look across the diamond for them, and it's just so impressive. You have the preseason player of the year in Jayslav Ouellette. You have the reigning SEC freshman of the year, Gavin Grahovic, excuse me. You have Ryan Prager, the left-handed starter, who I firmly believe to be one of the best starting pitchers in college baseball this season. That is an experienced group. They also brought in one of the top transfer classes in the country, so it's not like you're just talking about returning talent. There are new faces in there as well who become immediate contributors, and that's the case in their rotation. That's going to be the case in their lineup. I just view that as a team that has everything going for it. And I'll tell you, Michael Early, their new head coach, might not be the most experienced. This is his first head coaching job. It's only his second job in terms of schools he's worked at. I still view Michael Early, however, as a good leader, somebody who's going to be able to kind of pick up where the school left off because his players respect him. And if you ask people around the coaching industry, they'll tell you he was one of the most head coaching ready people, in the nation after last season.
When you think about the SEC over the last few years, you've seen these first-time national champions, Mississippi State in 21, then Ole Miss in 22, last year with Tennessee, A&M probably the favorite this year. Is it ever going to happen for Arkansas?
Listen, I think Arkansas is an interesting case because Arkansas is arguably the best college pitching school in the country about 3 years running right now.
Won't argue.
And they don't necessarily match that caliber at the plate. And that was certainly the case last year when you have Hagen Smith, you know, I would say the best pitcher in the country. Mm-hmm. They lead the SEC in strikeouts per nine innings. It was a nasty staff. They couldn't really get it done at the plate. I think that this year's roster is a little bit better suited in that category. I think that they should be able to score more runs. The pitching staff is loaded once again, but the question continues to be, will they match their pitching production with offensive production? And I think that that will be something that, you know, kind of persists in terms of questions going into the year for sure.
So 10 SEC teams ranked in your top 25. Of the six that are unranked, who's somebody that could surprise and make a run in the postseason?
You know, I immediately lean towards Oklahoma, and the reason for that is because of their pitching rotation. I am pretty bullish on the twin duo of Kyson and Malachi Witherspoon, guys who I just find to be mature starting pitchers. Kyson especially is somebody who I think is a first-round caliber draft pick. He's got three real pitches. Whether or not they're going to hit, it's kind of a similar situation to Arkansas at a lower caliber. They bring back only one player who hit more than 10 home runs last year. It's not necessarily the most encouraging group offensively on paper. I do see guys, though, who have breakout potential on that lineup, and I wouldn't be surprised to see them break into our rankings at some point this season.
We'll sit on the two in-state teams before we get you out of here. Let's start with Ole Miss. You know, even with their national championship here, that was not a great regular season for the Rebels. They got hot at the right time. Now back-to-back last place finishes in the conference. What about this Rebel team? Are they going to get back into the postseason, or are we going to see a coaching change in Oxford at the end of this year?
Listen, I think that Ole Miss is kind of in a precarious situation. They lost a reasonably considerable amount of talent this past offseason. Andrew Fisher immediately comes to mind. Liam Doyle is another guy who, you know, I view those two players as would-be key cogs had they stayed. I mean, a rotation leader and certainly an offensive lineup leader no longer on the team. It puts you in a really difficult spot to improve upon a season in which, like you just said, they weren't very impressive in the first place. And so I think Ole Miss is in a really challenging position right now. Do I think that that's the kind of team that could surprise people? Certainly, we've seen it before. They did it in the year that they won the national championship. But it's hard for me right now before the season to look at that roster and say things are on the up and it's going to be much better right now.
There may not be a more consistent team in the country and certainly in this state than Southern Mississippi. Not ranked in your poll and most other polls for some reason. Why aren't the Golden Eagles a top 25 team in your mind?
So I actually, it's funny you asked that. I just wrote about my 10 teams that missed the top 25. And if I had to name three that were the absolute closest, and I mean we really debated their candidacy, it would be TCU, Troy, and Southern Miss. I think that those teams were right there. The biggest thing for me with Southern Miss is that they just need some guys to step up in the rotation. They lost some talent from last season that was really critical to them. They did bring back a lot, and especially so at the plate. I think that that's a team that could, you know, not even necessarily surprise. We know that Chris Ostrander does a fantastic job with that team, and I do think that they're going to win a whole bunch of games. But going into the season with questions on the mound, we felt as though it was the best to leave them out and let them prove themselves to get their way in rather than open the season in the rankings without, you know, some key guys, rotation members on the roster.
Something tells me they will not be out of your poll for very long. That's just too good a program and too consistent. Jacob, really appreciate you. As I told you before we started the interview, you know, we're baseball crazy here in the state of Mississippi. So looking forward to talking to you again some point this season and probably seeing you at Diddy Noble Field. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks so much, Brian.
Just you talk about no rest for the weary in basketball, same in baseball. I mean, it's crazy. 10 teams in the top 25 to start this season. I mean, just insane. And, I mean, I still can't get over that A&M can lose a coach the caliber of Jim Schlossnagel and be the number one team in the nation. It just tells you how much talent is on that roster. I think, you know, we've seen some new champions, right? State finally wins one. Ole Miss finally wins one. Last year's Tennessee, A&M. Arkansas, maybe this is finally their year to win one. We shall see.
And you got, I think, 12 or 13 teams in the SEC softball ranked.
I was on the way out last night from the hump. I was talking to I can't pronounce his last name. Bryce from WCBI. I'm not going to butcher the guy's last name. But we were talking and just about sports, and he was talking about softball. And he's like, yeah, I looked at that poll, and I was like, 13 teams? And I was just like, dude, Like, this is the most, I was like, as bad as basketball is right now, and as football, baseball, softball is the most brutal sport for the SEC. It's just so much competition. And I was like, and then they went and added Oklahoma and Texas.
And somehow Oklahoma's picked to finish
preseason third. I think that's a bad idea. Probably going to win another national title. So.
Yeah.
There that goes. All right. All right. Everybody.
Sound the alarms.
Sound the alarms. This is your ejection warning. If you're not a fan of the business of professional wrestling, now is the time to stop listening.
You got plenty of Mississippi State content today. Nobody out there can complain. You got the full show. We talked about basketball and baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Now leave this, the rest of the show, to the nerds.
All right. If you don't like it, stop listening now. If I hear a complaint out of any one of you, we're gonna have an issue. Let's put it that way, all right? It is time now to discuss maybe the greatest sporting event in America these days. And certainly, you talk about a rigged sporting event like the Super Bowl, all right? We've seen what they're going to do. You knew the Chiefs. Let's talk about real competition. The Royal Rumble.
Professional wrestling, to me, is just, it's absolute art.
And it is America's greatest art form.
If you can't appreciate it, then you're putting your blinders on and you just don't want to.
Well, again, it's the same thing as always. Well, you know it's fake. Yeah, and I know that there aren't such things as dragons, but I like Game of Thrones.
Correct.
I think that Bryan Cranston actually cooked meth.
Yes.
You know?
That's always my go-to. Like, you're going to sit here and...
It's a TV show.
Yeah, we know what's going on. They've actually come out and said it's fake. So we know that. We tune in for the drama. We tune in for the intrigue, for the art of it all.
Yes.
And the storytelling is I've seen some of the best stories. Seen some of the best stories of all time through wrestling.
So let's ask this question. This time a year ago, we kind of knew that it was going to be Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns again. Now they ended up sort of getting there in an odd way with The Rock coming in, and they wanted to do Rock versus Roman, and they ended up not. But we knew that more than likely Cody Rhodes was winning this Rumble to go to WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we know who's going to win this Royal Rumble this year. I feel like it's as wide open as it's been in quite some time. I don't really know what the main events are going to be for WrestleMania. I have an idea, but I don't really know. You know, we do a little this fun little thing where we put money in and you draw random numbers and whoever wins you can win, right? But if I said you had to pick the winner, who would you want to put your money on for this one?
That's a good question because I can make points for several different.
Oh, guys. I know.
I think that it might be John Cena.
Okay,
we're not talking about him. Nobody's saying anything about him, really. You know, that they'll include him in the promo about him being in the event, but this is his last hoorah as an active wrestler. And I think they're going to do something big with him before it's all said and done. He hasn't done anything yet. I think he announced back at like Survivor Series or something that this was going to be his last year. He hasn't really wrestled, which tells me he's probably training right now. He's trying to get in good shape to be, you know, the best shape he could possibly be to make a little bit of a run. You're going to see him more on TV the rest of the year, I imagine, starting with the Royal Rumble, then WrestleMania, then likely SummerSlam too. It would not shock me in the least if Cena won this thing. I don't think they're going to do Cody again this year.
No. Well,
he's won twice.
Cody's not in it, is he? He's a champion.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, he is a champion. That's brain fart on my part.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. So, yeah, Cody's not going to win this thing. Seth Rollins is a good pick. CM Punk's a good pick.
I feel like with Rollins, he's a guy he doesn't need to win this. If you say Seth Rollins is wrestling for the world title, people are just like, all right, it's Seth Rollins.
Mm-hmm.
Punk is interesting. Punk has always had like the dream of main eventing WrestleMania, so that gives him that opportunity. But Punk versus Cody, I don't know if that's the way they want to go. Cena is interesting to me. I don't think Cena wins the Royal Rumble. I think he comes in, he has a good showing, But maybe he gets close. Maybe he's the second to last guy. But I don't think he wins. Roman Reigns is the interesting one.
Yeah.
It's been a while since Roman's been in the Royal Rumble, right? Because he's been the champion for so long.
And Roman's going to have one of those Royal Rumbles where he's throwing out 10 people.
Yes. They're going to make him look like a monster.
He's going to be the powerhouse.
They're going to get him face-to-face with Jacob Fatu, probably at some point. Fatu is the new face of – I love that guy.
Yes. He's going to be a baby face.
Yeah, very
soon.
He's
going to be a massive baby face. The other day, he really kind of – I think they put him in a good spot with Braun Strowman.
Yeah.
And he just destroyed Braun Strowman, who was the monster.
Yeah, not anymore.
Made him the immovable object or whatever.
Yeah.
He's going to be a massive baby face, and they're already starting to give that push to him.
Yeah.
I can see him, in a few months, Roman Reigns versus Jacob Fatu.
Yeah.
He's going to have he might be the guy actually that's the clear in the ring guy, the Kane that just comes in there and just demolishes everybody. That might be him.
So maybe a situation where he's in there and he's just dominating, and then Roman Reigns' music hits, and then you get that stare down, that face.
Yes.
That works for me.
I think Sami Zayn could last a long time in this.
Yeah.
I don't think he wins by any means, but I think he could be a guy that's like, second or third in the Rumble, and he lasts in the Final Four or something. He might be your guy that goes the distance. But it's a really exciting Rumble because I really don't know. I think we always have our guys where you're like, when they come in, like, that's a really good spot. Like, that's a really good pick when somebody gets their number.
Mm-hmm.
Like a Roman Reigns or Cody Rhodes or something like that. When they come in, we sit there and we go,
There's a lot of guys that we can say that about this year.
There is a lot of guys. That's what I like about the Royal Rumble when it's like this, is you don't have a clear cut. There's been years where we've said, Roman Reigns is going to win.
Yeah.
Cody Rhodes is going to win, whatever. This year, I don't think we have a clear guy. Mm-hmm. That's what's great about it. Hopefully CM Punk can stay healthy this time.
We're not even talking about Randy Orton, who could easily win this.
Yeah, he's
could
he's
easily. Orton versus Rhodes is a – that sells.
Yeah.
They used to be teammates and the second generation star thing can play. And Orton, there's been so much talk about Cena getting Flair's record. Orton is not that far away from it. He could maybe make a push. It's something that they could do.
The other day on Raw, they kind of planted some seeds with CM Punk and Cody Rhodes.
That might
be a good WrestleMania. So that puts CM Punk squarely in the mix. But they also planted seeds with Seth Rollins and Gunther.
Yeah.
So
the Ring General?
I think CM Punk or Seth Rollins or Drew McIntyre.
Mm-hmm.
Those are them and Cena would probably be my top four.
Okay. I'm going to give you a prediction. First two guys in, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to tell you why. First guy, you mentioned him, Sami Zayn. He can go 30, 40 minutes, no issues. Number two guy, partnership with TNA. The most over thing about Joe Hendry is the entrance. You got to let him have the full entrance. He's number two.
That would be awesome. I don't know how much they're going to do with the main roster with TNA. That's what I'm intrigued by.
I don't either, but that's
last year they
that's
did.
The spot for him is to let him come out and get the full wave your hands entrance.
Last year they had Naomi, who was in TNA at the time. Mm-hmm. I think Jordan Grace was too.
Mm-hmm.
So they very well could. That would be cool.
Yeah.
Another thing I'm really interested in is the ladder match, Kevin Owens and Cody Rhodes.
So I'm going to tell you, one of the wrestling tropes that I don't enjoy is when the non-champion has a belt. A couple years ago in AEW when Jay White stole the belt from MJF, and I was like, at some point, shouldn't Tony Khan just say, hey, give him back the belt or you're fired? That's not your belt. Like, what is the point of the belt? I don't get me wrong. I love seeing the old Winged Eagle belt out there. I love it. But, like, what are we doing here? Cody Rhodes is the champion.
It's playing off of WrestleMania 10, whenever Razor Ramon and Shawn Michaels had the know, the fake title, whatever. That or, was one of the great ladder matches of all time.
As Michael Borky likes to say, Razor Raymond.
Was that what he calls him?
Yes.
Man. Well, I think because they brought Shawn Michaels in the other day for the contract signing, so I think they're trying to replicate a little bit of that. I do love this bit that Kevin Owens is playing out.
Yeah,
he came out the other day with a Cody Sucks Egg
shirt. With Dory Funk in the audience. It was great.
He also had a shirt made that was like a Canadian son of an electrical engineer or something like that. That was pretty good too.
Cody's winning this match, though. They're not taking the belt off of him.
Yeah.
He's going to get at least get – I think he's going to hold the belt. I don't know if he's the guy that – I think Cena's going to get one more title run. They're going because I think they want to say that the greatest champion of all time was strictly a WWE guy.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I don't think it's here. I don't think it's at WrestleMania. I think it's at SummerSlam.
I think it's SummerSlam.
That way he can hold it for a couple of months, and then in the last pay-per-view of the year in his last match – he drops it to whoever.
You lose it at Survivor Series.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
And then maybe do like one. I think his last match should just be a match with like Randy Orton, just to have one more go round of that incredible rivalry. So,
yeah.
So our predictions are who if I said, who's your prediction? You're going to say Punk?
I might say Seth Rollins.
Ooh, okay. I'm gonna go with Punk. I think he's gonna win. I think he's never won the Royal Rumble. This is his time to do it. The Women's Royal Rumble, it looks like Charlotte's coming back, so she'll win, right?
I think it's gonna be Becky Lynch.
Ooh,
she thinks I haven't checked on her lately, but last I knew, she was very close to returning, and something happened. If she returns, which I think is a possibility, because they are not saying anything about her, I think I think she's going to win it.
Okay. That'd be interesting. So one way or the other, we think somebody's coming back. I think it's going to be Charlotte.
If it's not Becky, I think it's Charlotte for sure. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Should be fun. 5:00. I will be at the Casa de la Falk for our annual Royal Rumble shenanigans. All right. You got no way reason to complain. If you're still listening and you're mad, I can't believe they talked about wrestling. It's on you.
If they sat there and listened to this, if they were not a wrestling fan, we got a good chance of converting them at this point.
Brian Haydad and Robbie Falk didn't screw you. You screwed you.
We have actually turned a lot of back into wrestling fans. You look at our rumblings questions, they're turning into wrestling questions.
They are. All right. We'll be back on Sunday, recap everything that happened over the weekend, and get you set for another great week of Mississippi State sports. For Robbie Falk, I'm Brian Haydad. Thanks for listening to Thunder and Lightning here on Super Talk, Mississippi. London and Paris and Tokyo, America, Scotland, and Canada, and Mexico. They say, I believe in Joe Hendry. I believe in Joe Hendry.
Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.